We're checking in with the car doctor, John Paul, from AAA Northeast to get a little update on how the pandemic is impacting AAA, affecting travel, affecting transportation in general. John, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Joe, and I do really feel like I'm seeing you. So this is interesting. Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is, I hate to use the expression because it's used so often now, but the new normal. And, you know, I haven't been in the office since March 13th. And it's just, it is different. I keep saying, anybody who listened, my boss was the smartest guy in the world because he sent our IT department out and bought a billion laptops, it seems like. And we have within five states, about 3,000 employees, and 90% of them are all working from home, and they're being very productive. Road service calls are being taken from home. Insurance calls are being taken from home. And my commute has moved from about 100 miles round trip back and forth to work to about 50 steps. So when I get up in the morning, I walk down to my basement, which is where I am right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of this going forward post-pandemic. A lot of companies are learning a lot of new ways to do things right. And still be productive. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is sort of interesting, but it really hasn't changed. I've been around a little bit. I went out to Cape Cod over the 4th of July week, and the Cape was busy. The Cape was hopping, and I talked to somebody who was in Maine last week, and they said traffic going back and forth to Maine. I think there is a pent-up demand for people to get out, and a lot of the businesses have adapted pretty well to being able to service their customers, whether they're hotels that are going through extra sanitation processes. There's an Airbnb cottage across the street from me, and the woman is there every Saturday. She spends about 4 hours in, deep cleaning, which is, I guess, a requirement with Airbnb now. And so there is, people are doing, trying to make do the best they can with what they are. A restaurant that I sometimes go to, put a bunch of picnic tables outside, and I think they're doing better now than they would during the normal season. So, people are adapting and people are out. And we didn't do a traditional 4th of July release this year about travel, but we did do sort of a summer travel overview, and we found that there were going to be about 700 million trips over the course of the summer. So people taking a week here and a week there, or 3 or 4 days here and there, and no big surprise, about 99% of those trips were going to be by car. So don't be surprised if you're on the road and you think, well, nobody's commuting into work, but they're still commuting to go. They're still going on vacation. So the going up to the mountains of New Hampshire and the lakes region of New Hampshire has been pretty busy. Going down to Cape Cod, I think over 4th of July weekend, had a pretty substantial traffic backup going over the Sagamore and Bourne bridges. So people are out and they're traveling.
Yeah, well, since last we talked, the state is now in phase three of its reopening plan. So some dine-in options are available, although, obviously with restrictions, no big public gatherings. But I think it seems like a lot of people are doing staycations or day trips or right. Stay closer to home trips.
Yeah. Yeah, where I am, there's two rental cottages, one next door to me and one across the street. And they both are small. They're both two-bedroom cottages, but somehow they seem to be jamming more than one family in there. So I think people are kind of pooling their resources a little bit, and either they're renting the cottage for a week and then they have friends coming down for 2 or 3 days. So they are trying to, people, you're right. They may not be traveling long distances, but they are traveling somewhat, and they're trying to make the best of the situation and hopefully trying to stay safe.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Have we seen the spike in gas prices that we typically see over the summertime?
Normally what happens is we see for about the last 10 years, prices have changed a little bit. We always used to see prices start to creep up the end of April, sort of really start to shoot up the end of May, and sort of peak around the 4th of July. Now what we're seeing in the past 7 to 10 years is the prices actually went up at the end of the sort of winter fuel sell-off. So there's this dip when they sell off the excess winter fuel. And then as they start to mix the summer fuel, the prices go up and actually start to peak more in May than they did in July. Mm-hmm. Now what we're seeing is sort of a stabilization of prices. So we did see prices go up, but still we are seeing prices that are considerably lower than they were a year ago, about 75 cents a gallon lower than they were a year ago. And I think this week, maybe prices were about the same. If not, maybe they went up a penny. And I think that's about what we're going to see. People that were predicting sort of a end of the world price with $4 a gallon by the midsummer realized how wrong they were. Mm. Gasoline use obviously is down because a lot more people are not going into the office. So that use is down. Recreational use of gasoline is up. It's a little hard to separate the two, but some people smarter than me have sort of figured that out. So I think what we're going to see is prices stabilize somewhat. I think when they look at how much gasoline gets used, the numbers are going to be down. But the gasoline producers, they're the control. So, you know, when they see the use go down, they pump less. When they pump less, the price goes up. So it's sort of, you know, I always liken it to the lemonade stand on a hot summer day that the kids have out. They can get more for their lemonade when there's less lemonade stands and more hot days. And it's the same thing with gasoline. They can do sort of the same thing. It still is really supply and demand. And when the supply starts to tighten up, either artificially because there is a, you know, refinery issue that they decide they want to do some refinery maintenance and that brings the supply down, or something a little more catastrophic like a hurricane that shuts down oil platforms and may not even do any damage. But when there's a prediction of a hurricane, a lot of times they'll shut platforms down for 3 or 4 days. That will change the supply dynamic, which in turn will change the pricing around a bit. So, the high prices, no, I don't think we're going to see them. The crude oil prices are about $41 or $42 a barrel. So that translates into about 60% or so of what retail gasoline prices turn out to be. So that is, I think, where the crude oil prices are going to stay unless OPEC gets crazy or Russia gets crazy but the good news is we're able to produce the oil and gasoline we need here for the United States. So it's less of an impact for us than it is for other than it was, say, when I was trying to commute to school in 1974, when there was gas shortages and you could only buy so much gas.
Right. I remember those two. Yeah. What are we seeing in terms of longer travel, air travel, John, right now?
Air travel is way off. Air travel is starting to come back a bit, but air travel is still off, in the double digit numbers. So, okay. And it's not surprising. Same thing with the cruise industry. Cruises may start up again in September or so. But primarily right now we are seeing it's just road trips more than anything else. But it is starting to turn around. I flew in June, and on the flight down, the plane was about half empty, I would say. On the flight back, the flight was full, but every middle seat was empty. And Logan Airport at 4 in the afternoon looked like Logan Airport at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
The restaurants were closed. Yep. Most of the bars were closed in the airport. The little convenience store, the Hudson News places, they were open. But it was different. And on the plane was different. I mean, they tell you about how they sanitize things. The flight attendants all had their protective equipment on. And this flight, unlike the usual cheap flights that I fly, this one gave you a snack. But the snack came in a sealed bag, and they actually handed you the bag with a pair of tongs.
Oh, really?
So they weren't touching the, who knows who touched it before then, But they handed you the bag with a pair of tongs, and inside the bag was, you know, some chips and a bottle of water. And there was no alcohol served on the plane, although I guess you could get a soft drink. So it was different. And just the idea to be at Logan Airport, one of the busiest airports around it, you know, in the middle of a typical afternoon and see not a lot of people. It was sort of interesting. And although it was one of the more interesting things I saw, there was two people that got off the plane and they were in full hazmat suits.
Wow.
So they were, so they were dressed in full white, you know, hazmat suits.
Just regular passengers?
Regular passengers.
Okay.
So I thought that was sort of funny.
Yeah, but in the same way, you were a little bit envious. Like,
yeah,
they're totally protected.
Hey, maybe I should have thought of that.
That's right. But,
and it was sort of interesting, too, that even when you went to check in, they actually encouraged to do the, have the boarding pass on your phone.
Yes.
And you would hold your phone rather than them.
Yes.
So there was really no contact with a lot of people, and you would hold up your ID rather than handing it to the TSA agent. So it was different, but it was okay. Mm-hmm. It was okay in that respect. But it was, I think this is going to be a lot of changes, and you know, who knows what's going to happen from here.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see in the future if, actual face-to-face travel agencies revert more to teleconferencing this and more electronic forms of booking.
Yeah. Yeah, we have opened about 80% of our offices now, but with limited staff. So people that are able to do their job at home, travel agents, insurance agents, they're still staying at home because we can only have so many people in the office.
Right.
So we're only having 5 members come in at a time, and we're limiting our office staff to as many people that make it practical to work. So when someone comes in and says, oh, I'm interested in getting car insurance, or, you know what, I think this is going to change by the first year, I want to book that cruise, we take their name and number and we have someone call them back, and they do it exactly, you know, like how we're doing it now, either virtually where you can actually see and talk to people, or just talk to them over the phone.
Yeah.
And it's working out okay. Our financial services department has been writing, you know, it's a good time to buy a house right now, for both the buyers and sellers. People selling houses are being snapped up because the mortgage rates are low.
Very low.
So you know, people are coming to us for mortgages, and people are coming to us to see about refinancing. Maybe they got a car loan a year ago, and they'll look at it and they'll say, well, can I refinance my car loan?
Mm-hmm.
And they can. And it's not a huge savings, but talking to one of our folks, he always says, you know, maybe you're going to save $10 a month on your car loan. Well, that doesn't sound like a lot. But he always says, if you were walking down the street and you saw a $10 bill, would you bend down and pick it up? Sure you would.
Yeah.
And how about the next month? Would you bend down and pick it up? Sure you would. So over the course of the year, it might only be, you know, if it's $10, $120. Over the course of a 4 or 5 year loan, it's $500. Who doesn't want to save $500, and all you have to do is paperwork and it doesn't cost you anything? So,
it's you know, now it's, I mean, it's gas money now with the price.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things too. You know, we look at gasoline consumption, and we always used to joke, you know, MPG, miles per gallon. Now we kind of say months per gallon. You know, people are not buying gasoline the way they used to.
Yeah.
And that isn't so, it's, you know, up until now, where if you've been out at all, I took a ride to Middleborough yesterday for a meeting, and 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Route 3 South felt a lot like 5 o'clock in the afternoon in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic was going about 35 or 40 miles an hour. Both lanes and the breakdown lane had cars in it.
Okay.
It was pretty significant traffic. It backed up almost to a stop at Route 44. So it really did feel like, you know, people are heading back out on the roads. But prior to this, we were seeing an awful lot of dead batteries, an awful lot of flat tires. People were, you know, the gasoline in people's cars weren't necessarily getting stale, but it can act up a little bit. So, you know, we tried to tell people go out once a week, even if you're not going anywhere, go out once a week and take a good 30-minute drive mm-hmm. to kind of slosh the gas around in the tank, you know, keep the tires from getting flat spots.
Yeah.
It recharges the battery.
Yep.
And, you know, and you know, it's a good excuse to go out there and, providing there's no restrictions in your town, go out and wash and wax your car, a little bit of exercise, but, you know, it keeps the sap and dirt and stuff off the car and helps preserve the finish. So.
Sure. We were seeing a lot of high-speed crashes, too, at that point
right.
when there were so many.
The numbers are a little funny because within the period we looked at from, say, the middle of March till the beginning of May or middle of May, I guess, we saw one more fatality on the roads than we would normally over that period, but we saw half the traffic.
Right.
So if you went to the school with fuzzy math, you know, fatalities went up 100%.
Right.
Because there was only half as much traffic on the road.
Right.
The reality of it is when there's a lot of traffic on the road and Boston gets rated as a pretty safe city to drive in, and most people, when you say that, go, what? Well, part of it is, and it sounds kind of odd in a way, you can't go fast enough to kill yourself. And we have really good medicals. You know, we have the best hospitals in the world and really responsive EMS. So because of that, it's a pretty safe place to be. With a lot less traffic on the road, the amount of tickets that the state police have written to drivers going over 100 miles an hour is pretty significant, and the chance of surviving a crash at 60 miles an hour versus 80 or 90 miles an hour, the survival rate goes down pretty exponentially. So, sure. So even though there may not be the same amount of traffic on the road, this is not an excuse to, you know, see how good your car handles and performs. And what most people don't know that haven't driven at those kinds of speeds is your car may stop really well at 60 or 70 miles an hour. The difference in performance at 80 or 90 miles an hour is dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And where you would normally think, oh, I can stop easily, it takes a lot more effort, it takes a lot more time, and it takes a lot more distance. And that's where people get in trouble.
Sure. How are registry services being impacted right now, John?
Oh, sure, yeah. You know, right now you need to make an appointment to get just about anything done, whether it's at a AAA office where members can take advantage of registry service or at AAA at registry locations. Typically, there's about a two-week wait.
Wow.
And you have to go online. And you look for that window of opportunity. So 2 weeks from now at 2:00 in the afternoon, there might be an opening to get a driver's license renewal or a registration renewal. And what the Commonwealth has been doing in the meantime, say I wanted to buy your car and you sell me your car, I would go to my insurance company. I would get all the registration forms done, but I wouldn't be able to transfer the license plates because I can't go to the registry to get it done.
Okay.
So they've said, well, have all your information, drive the car. If you do get stopped by the police, say, well, here's my registration. Here's my proof of insurance. I'm just not able to get in to get it done. And the registry is sort of accepting that right now. And the same thing with driver's licenses and registration renewals. There's been a pretty much rolling 90-day window, which I think ends at the end of this month. So even if you had an inspection sticker that was due in June, well, that inspection sticker wasn't going to, even though it expired, it didn't expire.
Gotcha.
So, but I think unless there's changes, and I haven't looked today, things may revert back to normal expirations at this point.
Okay.
And what's good for people who were panicked about Real ID, getting that enhanced driver's license that allows you into federal buildings and fly domestically, with everything that's gone on with COVID, the federal government's extended that deadline from October of 2020 to October of 2021.
Oh.
So if you decided you needed Real ID because you don't want to carry your passport or you fly domestically pretty regularly or you need to go into a federal building on a regular basis now that's been extended another year. And hopefully, you know, by the end of this year, things will be settled out enough where kind of business will be back to normal. But I don't have the crystal ball to predict that. So
obviously, yeah. Are there any preliminary statistics? I'm curious about how the new hands-free driving law is impacting safety on the roads.
Not really. Okay. I've heard that the amount of, you know, when you think about how to improve safety on the road, you engineer safety, you build better roadways. You educate people and say, don't do this because it's stupid.
Right.
Or else you do it through enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody hates enforcement. I remember the last time I drove through a stop sign. I was about 21 years old and I got a ticket for it.
Oh.
And I don't go through stop signs anymore because of enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's what it takes to get people to do what they need to do to be safe. I don't go out, obviously, I don't go out on the road as much as I used to. I don't see as much people holding their phone in their hand as I used to.
Yeah.
But I still see it. But I would suspect that enforcement is up a bit, which is making people put their phones down. Last weekend or 2 weekends ago, I was driving down the highway and I saw the state police, and there were two troopers in the car. One had binoculars, and I assume they were looking for people on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So it wouldn't surprise me. You know, you can't, all of us can multitask. 92% of us can only do it poorly. So there's only about 8% of the people that can multitask. The other people that can, you know, fly a helicopter and, you know, fly a, you know, F-16.
Mm.
Most of us can't fly an F-16 or fly a helicopter.
Right.
And when we multitask, when we're driving and we're on the phone, we're dividing our attention. And in many, many cases, our attention is more focused on the conversation than it is on the driving, and that's where the problems happen.
Okay. I have a maintenance question. A person asked me to ask you a question about air conditioning in vehicles, and it's a very specific question, so
okay.
I'll see how you do. I didn't talk to you beforehand, so
okay.
Let folks know. He has a 2008 Ford F-150,
mm-hmm.
and the air conditioning died.
Okay.
So took it to a service shop, had it tested, that the machine showed no leaks in the system, so had it charged up and is working fine, and the technician told him it should be good for 5 years. So the question is, why did it run out and why is it only good for 5 years if there's no leaks in the system?
Well, first off, to be able to, I want to meet the 5 year predictor technician and have them pick out lottery numbers for me, because I don't know how they can predict 5 years.
Okay.
There is a leak in the system. That's why it ran out.
Okay.
It's obviously a very small leak. But when you're looking at pressures of, you know, several hundred pounds per square inch, it doesn't take much of a leak to cause, you know, the system to empty out the refrigerant inside of it. They could have added a sealant to the inside. So when they were recharging the system, there are some sealants they can add that are supposed to coat the inside of things and cause some of the rubber seals to expand a little bit. If I had to make a prediction, they'll be lucky to get through the summer with the air conditioning working the way it should. And then next time they'll find the leak.
Okay.
Yeah. And depending, you know, it could be a seal on the air compressor. It could be the condenser that sits in front of the radiator that helps convert the gases, you know, from, you know, being 12 years old, it could have picked up a tiny little stone, you know, stone could have hit it and made a little teeny tiny hole in it. It could just start to corrode inside the car. There's a part called an evaporator, which could have the beginning of a leak, or one of the hoses that is just starting. But, you know, it is, what they did is they probably tested the system under a vacuum. So they suck all the whatever's in there out and they let it sit for a little bit and see if it holds that, you know, 17 inches of vacuum. And if it does, it's a pretty fair shot. It's a fairly small leak. Or they may have put a little bit of refrigerant in it with a dye and then looked to see with an ultraviolet light afterwards if they could see the dye. The problem is there are several parts, the evaporator, which is the part that kind of the cool air comes from inside the car. It actually technically takes the heat away. And you can't see that. So if it's leaking there, you can't really see it, so you don't know. So 5 years, you call me in 5 years. Let me know if it still works.
Okay. That's what I figured. I didn't think there was any magic potion that automatically fixed it. But with this hot weather that we're in, are there any special considerations for the AC systems in cars?
No, most of the systems are pretty robust. They work pretty well. Years and years ago when we used Freon as a refrigerant, a jug of Freon, a 20-pound container of Freon, cost about $10 or $12. Now, refrigerant can literally cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Hmm. And back then, if you came into a shop and you said, my air conditioner's not working, you'd give it a look, you'd fill it with Freon, and say, hey, Joe, it might last you through the summer, it might last you a couple of years, who knows, good luck.
Yeah.
And it was so inexpensive, you didn't worry about it.
Okay.
Then we found out we were, you know, poking holes in the ozone because all that Freon ended up somewhere and it ended up making holes in the ozone. So we went to a more environmentally friendly refrigerant, which also meant it went up in price. The systems run at higher pressures. So they sort of work till they don't. We used to recommend every year, we'll bring a car in, we'll suck all the old refrigerant out, we just let it go out into the air because we didn't care. And then and we'll put new refrigerant in and that would get any moisture out of the system. We don't recommend routine maintenance anymore, even to the point for a while they were saying, well, we'll take the old refrigerant out, we'll clean it and put it back in again, a good routine maintenance. Systems now sort of work till they don't. Okay. And they can clog up, they can have problems, but people just sort of, you know, people with 15-year-old cars, the air conditioners are still working. I was in a shop the other day and it was a probably 6 or 7-year-old General Motors car and it had a system leak, 15 hours to repair it.
Wow.
So, it would take less time and less money to rebuild the engine than it would be to fix the air conditioner in this car. You literally had to take the whole inside of the car apart. The dash was out, the steering column was out to get to the parts to be able to fix the leak. So crazy amount of labor and you know, would periodic maintenance help that? Probably not.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that just leaked.
Same with cooling systems in today's
cooling systems, they're not quite as serious cost-wise.
Okay.
Way back when they used to call something permanent antifreeze,
mm-hmm.
because in the old days, antifreeze, there was no such thing as antifreeze. People added alcohol to the radiators to keep it from freezing.
Mm.
So the alcohol would evaporate, so you had to periodically add more alcohol. Then they came out with true antifreeze engine coolant that we see now. It doesn't evaporate, but it does have a life, and it's somewhere between typically 3 to 5 years, and in some cases longer. But depending on the car, it still makes sense to periodically look at it. If it's starting to get to the point where it's not going to protect the car against freezing or overheating, because it does both, or it's really starting to look really discolored, or it's starting to pick up some acid content, which is bad for the engine, they actually can dip a strip in there like people do with swimming pools and measure the pH content. And if the pH content is high, it's time to change the coolant. Not very expensive these days. And it's usually, in a lot of cases, it's a drain and refill. It isn't that serious. So it still makes sense to check that periodically. And there is a key part to most cooling systems called the thermostat. And the thermostat allows the engine to get hot without overheating. And then it opens to allow coolant to circulate. And that can wear out over time. So if you notice the temperature gauge is higher than it used to be or lower than it used to be, it's a good idea to bring your car in and have it checked and see what's going on with it.
Okay, very good. If folks do have questions like that or others, John, how do they get a hold of you?
The easiest way, go to AAA.com/cardoctor, and you can read all about me. It's a very quick read, by the way. But there is a section in there, ask a question, and I try to answer every single question I get. So whether it's about repairing a car, thinking about a new car, what you think of certain features, you know, opinions about anything, I will try to answer whatever questions I can. And if it's something I don't know anything about, like car refinancing, car insurance, send me the question too, and I'll send it to the right person.
Good enough. Great to see you virtually, as it has to be, but appreciate your time, John.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Be well.
You as well.